Members, we're going to get started. Excuse me. We have a very full agenda today with bills that require, you know, some more thoughtful discussion, perhaps, than other days. And so I want to get us going, and we'll get us officially together once we have a quorum. First up, we have House File 2106, Representative Y, and the chair will move that House File 2106 be recommended to pass. And Representative Y, I think the motion then is to refer to finance for further movement onto the K-12 Finance Committee. So that'll be the chair's motion, unless you direct me to do another motion. But good morning, Representative Y.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. And thank you for hearing the bill. This some of you may remember that recently a legislative auditor's study was done on alternative programs, and one of the concerns that came out of that report was the reality that oftentimes alternative schools end up on the list of failing schools or not being able to meet AYP, perhaps because of the measures that are used to evaluate our students and our programs. And our sense is that the goals and mission of our programs are not really taken into account under those the measures that are used. And not that we're saying we should be excluded from those measures, but we would like to have the measures that show what we really do positively for students get recognized as well. And to that effect, I do have a delete all amendment, which I think is before you.
Representative Bly, I will move the H-2106 DE-1 amendment. Members, you should have that package, and this puts the bill in the form that the author wishes to have it before us today. It's a delete everything amendment. So, are we at quorum yet?
No.
We're not. Okay. As soon as we do, we will officially move on.
Okay. All right.
Stuff. But why don't you proceed?
I also want to thank Lisa Larson and research for a lot of work she did to help me frame this approach, and I may have to call upon her to help me explain some of the things in the bill, but that's fine.
It's something that we commonly do in this.
Okay,
committee,
very good, very good. And I want to introduce my first guest here, Wayne Jennings, who has a very distinguished career in education, having once been the principal for the St. Paul Open School, but also starting a Designs for Learning. And he is here representing the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs, and I'd like him to kind of speak to the need for this kind of legislation.
Good morning, Mr. Jennings. It's a pleasure
morning,
to have
Mr.
you
Chair
here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and representatives. I'm a member of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs Board, and as an ex-official member, and I have been for about maybe 20 years because of my interest in serving all students. Have a long involvement in education, as Representative Bly has mentioned. I believe that our ultimate goals of education have to do with citizenship, productive work, and lifelong learning, and that the measures we use in education don't adequately take care of that. Many of the students that are served by area learning centers and other programs for at-risk students come with a record of poor achievement in school, and it's then the duty of those programs to see if we can't get those students back into a learning mode and successful at school work. That is to say, we inherit these students, and it takes some time to turn them around. It just doesn't happen overnight. The excessive testing that we do for many of these students results in excessive frustration. So we need other kinds of measures to get at. We need it probably throughout education, but we need it particularly in these programs, and thus the need for this pilot. This would serve all of education very well. We need measures, things called 20th century skills, things like citizenship, responsibility, initiative, etc. And there are ways to do that. There are measures for that. Right now, they're not really taken into account with our current state testing system. So I think that this bill really helps to accomplish that. And with a pilot, it would unleash creativity at the local site and finding better ways to measure our students and their real accomplishments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jennings. Representative Black.
Yes, next I'd like to call upon a student who is one of the MapStars representatives, which is a youth organization within the MAP organization, and I'd like her to come up and just speak to Bill.
Wonderful. And while we do that, as we transition, we are at quorum, so I'm going to officially call us to order. And the chair will move House File 2106 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Finance Committee with a further referral on to the K-12 Finance Committee. And furthermore, the chair will move H-2106-DE1, the Delete Everything Amendment. Members, all in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And with that, Ms. Williams, good morning. Thank you for being with us, or being here with us today.
Good morning. I'm successful beyond measure. Hello. My name is Justine Williams. I am a 17-year-old student who attends Jennings Community Learning Center in St. Paul. I wasn't always successful in school. As a matter of fact, I was the complete opposite. When I was 12 years old, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. It became more difficult to function at my previous school. I found it became a struggle just to get up each morning because I would be so sore. I began coming to school later and later, and sometimes I wouldn't come at all because of doctor's appointments, or just because my joints would flare up. I remember administrators making sarcastic remarks like, "Look who decided they wanted to come to school today." Students would interrogate me. They would ask me, "Why are you ditching school? What gives you the right?" I didn't know how to explain my tribulations to my peers. I began developing anxiety problems. When I went to school late to prevent anxiety attacks, I would have to be on time to my next class, or I would have to wait until the girls' bathroom until I was. I failed most of my classes because I was never present, but for some reason I passed my MCA test with ease. Am I a genius? Probably not. Am I a good test taker? Maybe. My point is, there's so much emphasis on this one test in a way that implies that it's the only way to measure success. In my case, it did just the opposite. I am only one student, but I represent many who have slipped through the cracks of achieving academically. In too many cases, young people like me are falling victim to being measured only by one instrument. The state's educational testing system may measure some educational skills, but what about the many factors that contribute to the way students learn? How are we going to address all these things that tests cannot measure? Will more students continue to be ignored? When I came to Jennings Community Learning Center, I was amazed by the different assessments I took. They focused on various aspects of my skills, abilities, and temperament. The assessments describe a starting point so the school can help me grow academically, socially, and in character. Knowing where I was in life made me more motivated to succeed. I became more successful at managing my fibromyalgia. My teachers are very flexible, and because of that, I fought every morning to get up. My attendance went from 58% to 96%. I am very active in school. I am ahead of in credits, and I'm now looking for prospective colleges. I've become a more active member in my community. I serve as a school representative on my school board of directors. I am a MapStars officer. MapStars is an organization that represents all alternative programs in the state of Minnesota. And I have been accepted to spend a year in Japan through the Rotary of St. Paul. My school continues to measure my success. I am proud of how far I've come. I continue to improve, and for that reason I say I am successful beyond measure.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. And let me just add on my behalf, but also no doubt on behalf of our entire committee, we're proud of you for your clear perseverance and making through some very difficult times. It sounded like folks were making some wrong assumptions about where you were at a little while ago. And it sounds like you wound up in an environment that was able to understand where you were at, and really bully for you in terms of understanding and focusing on the need to be very real about your life, and that perceiving that one measure alone wasn't the kind of information that was going to get you ahead in life. And so congratulations for your maturity, and good luck in your future studies. What year are you in currently?
I'm sorry.
What year are you in currently? What grade? I'm sorry.
I'm a junior.
You're a junior. Okay. So you're looking for colleges this year.
Yes.
Good. Good luck with that. Thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you.
Representative Lai.
Yes, I have one more testifier, Dr. Rachel Pimenona, who is with the University of Minnesota Research Department. Let me just say, as she's making her way up here, that there is a fair amount of talk about trying to work with students who have struggled or who are at risk for not graduating at both the federal and the state level. And it's another reason I think it's so important to bring this forward. And we, as in alternative programs and in our state association, have been working to further these ideas of how do you best serve these students for about 30 years. And we want to make sure that our expertise, what we've learned, is recognized and supported. So without further ado.
Well, and Representative Bly, it's pretty clear from your previous testifier that the issue here isn't about setting a different target for quality in terms of our outcomes in our K-12 system. It's precisely about maintaining and shooting for high quality, and no doubt we'll hear a little bit more from that from Dr. Let's see if I get this right, Dr. Quinemoan.
Very close. Thank you, Chair Mariani. I hope I got that right now.
You did wonderful. Better than I did, apparently.
I'm Rachel Quinemoan from the National Center on Educational Outcomes at the University of Minnesota. We have been documenting state practices in inclusive assessment and accountability systems for over 20 years. We look not only at system accountability, how to build quality assessment and accountability systems to ensure that schools are providing the opportunities so students can be successful, but we also do look at and track and try to pull best practices from what we're learning about state graduation testing, in other words, student states, and it is some of that information I can share with the committee as you work.
Wonderful.
We not only describe, we identify best practice and conduct research, but our whole mission is to make actionable what we find out about practices across the country. We have been tracking graduation requirements and specifically graduation testing for about 10 years. Our last published report was 5 years, but I have with me the almost-to-be-released update. And there are remarkably similar key recommendations. I'll just share three of them today because I believe that in the topic under consideration, these three key recommendations are being addressed. First, when a graduation test is required, there should be alternative routes to a standard diploma available for students who need different ways to first build their skills and then show what they know. That's one of our key findings looking at all state practices across the country. The second key finding is that when you have those alternative pathways, it should ensure to students and to others that, in fact, the skills and knowledge represented by attainment of that standard diploma mean the same as what the state expects for all children. And then the third piece is very important, that once something like this goes into place, that data is monitored to ensure we know who is participating in the option, what effect it has on their outcomes in adult life, and to ensure that the quality of these alternative pathways, in fact, hold high standards, even as they allow people flexibility and creativity, I believe is a word Representative Bly used, in understanding how to measure those outcomes. So that summarizes what we know. We have a great deal of detail underneath it, and we would be available to this committee or to others in the future as you work on it.
Thank you, Dr. Quinneman. Representative Bly, we have, I think that includes your testifiers, is that correct? We do have some questions. Let me make an observation, but also share with the committee, in case you haven't fully looked through your packet, we do have the executive summary of the legislative auditor's report on alternative education programs in your packets. And I know that Representative Bly and his colleagues were guided in part by the report of legislative auditors. And let me just point out very quickly a couple of the major findings here. And I won't list these all, but one is that that about 7% of our public school students enroll in alternative education programs each year. It's a sizable number of students. And that many of the students who attend the alternative education programs qualify because they are behind academically. That in certain alternative programs, particularly those with extended time characteristics, there was a measured increase in test scores relative to many to their counterparts who weren't in such programs. And that issues like lower attendance and graduation rates improved over time with this population. And one of the recommendations that the auditor makes then is that the department should initiate a pilot project to use and evaluate additional measures of alternative education student performance. And so that partly takes us to the discussion before us. And so, members, I just want to point out the alignment, Representative Bly's bill, relative to some of the thoughts and recommendations of the legislative auditor. Representative Grilling, I believe you have a question, and I'm seeing you move. Representative Downey next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't really have a question, but I just wanted to give some affirmation to this effort. I was part of the working group of this committee when Representative Bly chaired it 2 or 3 years ago, and we kind of ended with a mixed result. And I just compliment Representative Bly and others who worked on this bill to take it to fruition, getting an auditor's report, working with people who know a lot about the subject, and setting up a process to do this. The big criticism always was that this wouldn't be fair if some had an easier test or something. And I think we just heard verification from Dr. Quinnemoen that is not the case. It's just a different test, but it would be equally hard and useful to see if students are prepared. So thank you.
Representative Downey, followed by Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is maybe kind of a question, comment, all rolled into one, but I know a lot of initiative in my own district is towards developing a personalized learning plan for every student, almost taking enough care with each student to develop an IEP, if you will, an individualized plan. And it seems like in some ways that's what we're doing here in a very narrow way, focused on kids who are on the margins. But maybe you could discuss for us, Representative Bly, if you talked about that in the working groups. How does this fit into, we've got the growth model coming, we've got a lot of great ways to track proficiency and improvement, and there's initiatives about personalized learning. How does this fit in or complement that, or perhaps contradict it?
Well, great question, Representative Downey and Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair Mark Mariani and Representative Downey, for that question. Alternative programs currently in law are required to have a continuous learning plan, which is like an IEP for each student. And it's part of our operating functions. So I think it fits well with thinking about that. Trying to recognize that the needs of our students, I mean, when I would go before my school board and my board would ask me, what's the typical student in your school? And I'd say, well, the typical student is that there's no typical student. They're all different, and we treat them differently and try to come up with different plans. There is a consequence of just looking at one measure, too, that affects the program as well, and that is, for instance, in my own program in Northfield, for a number of years, we had a teen parenting program that was that had academic skills that were taught and learned. In fact, you could work on you know, some skills through that program in that different way. But because of the tests and that course didn't fall into any of the kind of standardized definitions of what academics kids should be doing, we were forced to do away with that program. It was a great loss because I think it really helped not only those young parents but their children as they got ready for school. So, and that's just one example of a programming sort of strategy that goes by the wayside when you only use one measure to look at success for students. And I think that there are certainly other examples too. But so as you're thinking about either individual needs or needs of groups within that program or that school, you are sometimes governed and forced by a more rigid way of looking at measuring kids. And if that answers your question, rambled a bit, but.
Representative Bly, before I go to Representative Briner, and I know it's actually on this point, I wonder if maybe you can just very quickly, we haven't actually walked through the
right.
The bill, but perhaps if you can just very quickly identify how this bill works.
Well, let me also say that we are, one of the things that we're thinking about or hoping for is that if there are funds that come from the federal government to reach out to these kinds of efforts, that we're in a good position to capture some of that for this purpose. So I just want to kind of preface with that, and I think it's certainly possible. The bill directs the commissioner to identify and report measures that demonstrate the success of school districts, charter schools, and charter programs in improving the graduation outcomes of students who are at risk or off track for graduation. And that does define the students that come to us in there. Mm-hmm. I think there are 11 or 12 different categories in which students fall in that, or they could fall in as they come to our program, and that is talked about here. It mentions school performance report cards, and without having other measures, it's difficult for our schools, as I said before, to get a kind of a fair reckoning of the successes that we have. Implementing differentiated graduation rates and exploring alternative routes to a standard diploma for at-risk and off-track students, which is also something that we've been doing for years, and no works with these students that need different paths or different ways of getting to that diploma, as you heard an example with the student who testified. It directs the commissioner to convene a task force to look at and study those measures and report back. Allows the group to seek input from interested stakeholders and directs the group to meet quarterly and causes the group to expire. Expenses for participating in the group cause the group to expire on February 6th. I guess I'm not sure exactly. Perhaps Lisa Larson can explain that piece of the recommendation there.
Representative Bly, I'm sorry, what piece was that?
Well, I'm looking at the analysis here, and I see a date here, and I wasn't sure exactly what...
our effective date?
Yeah. Oh, I see. It says the first meeting by September 15th, 2010, which is a future date, but February 16th, 2010, is that an error, perhaps? Maybe it should be 2011. Okay. Then I understand it.
It sounds like we need to make an amendment here. Is that correct?
This is in the analysis, not the amendment. Let me
all
just
right.
see what
we're
the amendment says.
We're not passing the analysis. So.
No, the amendment says February 16, 2012. I should have been reading from that instead of the report, I guess. But. Okay. It directs the group to develop and submit to the commissioner and the education committees of the legislature recommendations and legislation to implement Section 1. Measuring and reporting differentiated graduation rates for at-risk and off-track students and the success and costs that school districts, charter schools, and alternative programs providers experience in identifying and serving at-risk and off-track students, establishing alternative routes to a standard diploma.
So, Representative Breiner, this is similar to the methodology that we deployed a couple of years ago in the establishment of some of the multiple measures that we added to the report card. And so this is probably a good segue to your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's exactly the perspective from which I'd like to comment and inquire of Representative Bly, but also it relates to Representative Downey's line of questioning about the broader application of this work to our entire student population, as well as its coordination with the multiple measure approach that we put into law earlier last year. So, first of all, I really appreciate your work, and I very much appreciate Ms. Williams' comments and the title of her remarks, Successful Beyond Measure, because I do believe that captures in three words the sort of discussion we've been having for years, you know, at the legislative table, at our school boards, in our communities. Students, how is it that measures can or can't capture the success of our students, and what do we owe to those students in terms of assuring that we're not limiting and constraining their success through the measures that we use, you know, to respond to this accountability movement. So I'm very much in agreement with the work you're doing, but I would say that I think the work is very compatible, Representative Downey, with the multiple measure approach that we advanced in the last session. The three measures we were looking at there, growth, course completion, and student engagement, I do think fit into this discussion. And I think one of the things I will ask and talk to Representative Bly about thinking through is that I think the student engagement piece in particular and the stakeholder group constituted around that ought to be working with the stakeholder group that you're talking about, mm-hmm. because I think they have exactly some of the same perspective on other aspects of student experience that appropriately reflect success. You know, so, and I would be willing to engage you further on that. I do have one very specific question on the line 2.35. The last word in that sentence is academic, and I'm wondering if it ought not to be relative rather than academic. If you go up to line 2.29, it says the commissioner must identify and report measures that demonstrate the relative success of school districts. So, and to have 2.35 reflect that same directive, the relative success that school districts, charter schools, I'm going over to 0.31 now, and alternative program providers experience, because if you look at the delineation of tasks underneath that, it's not about academic success necessarily. So I would just put, I would offer a friendly amendment to, I could just say I would move to amend it with the author's agreement to change the word academic to relative on line 2.35.
Representative Breiner moves that motion, or makes that motion. Representative Black.
Yeah, I would approve that.
Okay, members. Representative Obermuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, there's a typo in the line above it too. We might as well clear up if we can right there. I missed out on my chance to do it this session so far. Yeah. Last year I did such a good job of this.
You're back on track.
It's at 2.34 between the words who and eligible. We need the word R-A-R-E.
Very well. Representative Breiner moves on line 2.34 to insert the word R between who and eligible. And then on 2.35, okay, help me out here. We're striking the word academic?
Strike the word academic and insert the word relative.
Members? If no discussion, then all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. I probably should have said this earlier. I think part of the use of the word academic is some comfort here about academic issues. I should have done that earlier. Just Kurt, I'm just slow. We can always amend to maybe do academic and relative.
Mr. Chair, the reason for that is contextual. The word academic is included later in the charge to the task force.
Indeed.
They are looking at measures of academic success, and this other discussion is sort of subsumed under that. So it's not to say that we're moving to relative success as opposed to academic success. It's just in this context.
Right.
So I didn't mean to belabor the point. But my question to Representative Bly is, I'd like to hear you discuss the issue that you see embodied here in comparing school districts, charter schools, and alternative programs. When you say relative success, what are you looking at there, and what is the hope of measures that would embody that relative success?
Representative Bly.
I think when you heard Mr. Jennings or Dr. Jennings talk about what is success, you know, that in his view, success had more to do with preparing you for life and being able to deal with the challenges that are facing you. And I think that in the oftentimes in the few years we have to work with these students, there are certainly the academics are important, and I guess I'm going off on a track that isn't the answer. Even I'm guessing. Yeah, from
Representative Bly, we don't have time to go off
okay.
on track.
Yeah, 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 yeah. yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'll agree to visit with Representative Bly further, because I do think that what you're really saying is you're looking for alternative measures that are comparable to success measures in
Correct.
Other programs. But I don't know that the language necessarily
okay.
quite gets at that. But I'm
All
willing
right.
to visit with you about that, since I do support the broader intents of your
yeah.
work.
So rather than going off on a tangent, we'll work on that together. And I appreciate your comments.
We have one other question, and meanwhile, if there's anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the bill, if you can make your way forward to the testifying table, I'd appreciate it. Representative Demme.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I have question, comments, combined. As I was listening to Ms. Williams, excellent testimony, by the way, What struck me, Mr. Chair, is this an issue for a new program from the state level and the commissioner to get involved with, or did she not get some good help in her school? 58% attendance and nothing was happening. I mean, in my school, we had, if you miss 3 or 4 days, you get letters going, you're contacting parents, you're getting teachers involved and seeing what's happening with students. And I just couldn't help but think to myself, this sounds like an issue of a teacher and maybe a school system that failed a person, as opposed to in need of a new program from the state level with the commissioner coming out with something. As I was listening, and I just couldn't help but think, and in terms of one, you know, lots of things are going through my mind. One measure, Mr. Chair, a good teacher doesn't use just a single test to know how a student is doing. A good teacher is quizzing, giving homework, and testing that, and maybe some writing assignments, and evaluating. The state MCA test is simply a measure that you take that's a guideline on the side, and a new program, because we got a teacher that uses one measure, bothers me a bit, Representative Bly, and I'm not sure if we're using the right forum or the right format here to attack what sounds like a problem in this particular school. It's about teachers recognizing needs, school districts and local school boards and local administrators recognizing needs with kids in their schools. I'm not sure we can do all that from a state level, Mr. Chair, and come up with a new program because of something like this. I think it's a great thought. Should this be a school-level issue, that something should be done about that particular school and their meeting requirements, meeting the needs of students, or is this something we need a new state program for? I'm not sure. I don't know that we can legislate good teaching. I don't know that we legislate good a good follow-through with students in an individual school district, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. That's my concerns and my thoughts. And mm-hmm. Representative Bly, maybe you can help me. Are we at a level where we're trying to micromanage again in our school districts with legislation for a good purpose, but maybe we're taking a sledgehammer after something that is more local in nature?
And Representative Demmer, just for the sake of moving us along, let me say that if this was proposing a new program, I would probably share your concerns. I don't think that that's what's happening here. I think we're talking about a process by which there's an identification of precisely those processes that are either working or not working with particular students that we already recognize by having created an alternative learning environment. Perhaps, Representative Bligh, you can correct me if I'm wrong, and Ms. Dr. Quinneman, I think this says something about the research work that you've been involved in for many years. Dr. Representative Bligh.
We're not trying to create new programs. The programs exist. And because of the single measure, those programs which are designed to really meet the needs of these kids, like Ms. Williams, are often ending up on AYP lists because we're not being measured on the success that we have with students. We're being measured by this test. And the test measures their academic success over many years. And I think Ms. Williams sort of hit on why it's not the most appropriate measure, why a test, a single test, really can't capture the success that she's had. And for a variety of students, it doesn't. And so, no, we're not asking for a new program, but we're asking for additional ways to show for the programs that already exist that meet the needs of these students to show that they are successful and that how they can be successful.
Dr. Quinneman.
Chair Mariani, Representative, I want to disentangle a little bit the issue of system accountability. You raise a very important point about making sure that our schools, regardless of what type they are providing, recognizing individual needs, instituting the kinds of services and supports that the other representative mentioned earlier. In terms of student accountability, where you have a graduation test, you want to ensure that all students do, in fact, have a way to show what they know. And I believe that much of the work defined here gets at ensuring that you do indeed know whether or not a student knows what you as a state, we as a citizens, have decided all students should know and be able to do to be successful in adult life. However, I think the point that building in a network to hold the system accountable for preparing the students well, for catching before they fall, for working within your existing programs to do so, is a larger contextual issue. And that your point of the MCAs, for example, as a system accountability test not being the only way that teachers in good schools should be catching kids before they fall is very well taken. I do think that's a contextual issue here. I also believe that Representative Bligh is correct to say this ensures a pathway for students, ensures that you know well in that checkpoint of have we in fact given our students what they deserve to be prepared well for adult life, requires a really thoughtful process to say, and what would that look like? What do we endorse as ensuring not only that they show what they know, but that they have been treated well by the schools and have learned those important skills and knowledge that we as a state have identified as necessary. So it's the system and the student have to be in sync here. And the measurement then both holds the system accountable, but allows the student to show what they know.
Members, I should have asked Representative Kath to chair today because the chair is already 12 minutes beyond his self-imposed deadline for a vote on this bill in order to make sure we have other bills properly heard. I do have two other members who have questions, but let me call folks down who wish to testify for or against the bill. If they can come forward, and if you can keep your comments very brief, I'd greatly appreciate it. Mr. Heller, did you wish to make a comment?
Yes, could I have Ms. Q up here? I can't pronounce her name, so I apologize.
Mr. Heller, we don't have time for questioning of other testifiers. What I'm asking for is for your comments and thoughts on the bill. And if you can state your name for the record, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, my name is Richard Heller. I come to try to understand the bill. I have a hard time reading it. And one of the pieces of language is to understand the what off track means. I believe that you'd find that and criteria. I'm not sure if criteria and on track is the same thing. When I heard Ms. Madsen talk about last week about how kids can take the MCA, the Minnesota grads, and look at the test over with the answers they got incorrect, it appeared that he had a concern about breaking the standards of the test. And it seems like it would be lowering the rigors. Kids can have high visual memories when they do testing. Also, on page 4, under 4.2, it looks like it says 4 to 6 year graduation rate. I was left with the understanding last year it was a 5 year graduation rate. Now it looks like it's going to 6 year. I would like to know if taking a test breaks the rigors, you know, because especially same one over, Mr. Madsen had a concern about it. Seemed like he mentioned that. Maybe I misunderstood it. As far as understanding the difference again between criteria and what on track, what at risk is. For instance, the statutes talk about percentiles at risk. That's another component that may fit into this. I'd like to know if it's interrelational or are they making a whole new system. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Representative Bly, there are definitions of at risk and on track in the bill. You want to say something quickly about the 4 and 6 year graduation rates? I think we're basically using standard graduation measurement reporting requirements. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Very well. I do have Representative Swales, Representative Downey, and then members I'd like to take a vote on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make it very quick. Representative Bly, I'm curious because so much of this has to do with attendance rates. Have you also engaged with the Minnesota County Association and talking with them about truancy issues and how that interfaces with the alternative learning programs that you're purporting here?
Representative Bly.
I know that many of the alternative programs in area learning centers work very closely with truancy offices in the county and to solve that problem. And attendance in alternative programs is a continuing issue, and I think it's partly because of it's primarily because the students that we serve really struggle with that issue. It is a result of the not, you know, the non-school related issues that they deal with outside of the home or in the community or whatever. And believe me, we work very hard to improve that and find ways to make sure that students can get to school, because if they're not in school, they're not learning.
Representative Downey. Thank you, Representative Downey. Members, with that, the chair will renew his motion that House File 2106, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Black. Representative Mahoney, House File 3157. The chair would move House File 3157 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Health and Human Services, the Policy Committee on Health and Human Services. Representative Mahoney, I believe you also have some amendments here. Would it be appropriate to do that now?
Mr. Chair and committee members, it would be best to get it in the order that I would like it, because then it takes a lot of the heartburn out that came early on with this particular bill.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill if I could. You did? Oh, never mind.
Whoever does. I like to have the bill moved.
Actually, I withdraw my motion, and I will acknowledge that Representative Abler moves.
Well, it's my classmates. So I got to help.
House File 3157 be recommended to pass.
I'll move the amendment.
And the Representative Abler moves the A1 amendment.
A1 would be a good start.
All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Abler moves the A2 amendment. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney, tell us about this bill and why you're not a regular figure in the K-12 Policy Committee, so obviously something awfully important must have popped up for you to venture down here in the basement at 8:30 in the morning. So tell us what that happening was.
Mr. Chair, as the previous bill, it was a great example of one of the reasons why I stay out of your committee. I have civil justice to go to rather than yours. So, Mr. Chair, I had the great fortune of being asked by an acquaintance to address a group of students at Concordia College. They came to I fooled another group. They thought I was pretty good. And they came across as a project to find an issue that they thought was important and needed to be addressed. And they found this particular issue. I did not realize that if a child is, if an investigation starts on a child being abused in school, the parents aren't notified. And we'll have the witnesses come here and talk until the investigation is completed. So the child could literally be in that classroom, in that situation, for as long as that investigation happens. And the parent wouldn't even know. This bill requires the Department of Education, and I'm glad it's going to HHS because we really want to, there's a couple little words in there that they're thinking might be needed, but the Department of Education within 10 days to notify the parents. And Mr. Chair, if you would indulge me, I have a few people that would like to speak to this particular bill. And I'm not sure whether the students want to come up first or the Hermans want to come up.
Mr. Mahoney, I have Kate Benke, I believe, who's a student at Concordia University, and Mrs. Herman, who is a parent, and perhaps if both of them could come
if
down.
If I could ask the parents to come down and tell their story.
Wonderful. Good morning, and welcome to our House K-12 Policy Committee this morning.
Good morning, Chairman Mariani, Vice Chair Kapp, and the representative of the committee. My name is Laura Herman, and this is my husband, Sean. We're trying to get Kyle's picture up here, so you'll see his face as well.
Welcome.
We live in Blaine, and we are the parents of Kyle, for whom this bill is named after. We would like to thank the Concordia students and their professors for taking action after hearing Kyle's story and applaud their efforts in bringing this important piece of legislation to life. I'd like to take a few minutes to provide you with some background of Kyle's story and hope that it adds some further context as to why this is important to support this bill. We have been living what everyone would consider parents' worst nightmare.
Mrs. Herman, I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting. We're not picking up your voice, and so perhaps if we can... And unfortunately, that mic isn't long like the one I have, so I apologize for that. You can do that. Greatly appreciate it.
We have been living what everyone would consider a parent's worst nightmare, having a child become the victim of abuse. This nightmare is even more incomprehensible given that this abuse occurred while our son was at school. It goes without saying that the school setting is the last place where one would think abuse would be allowed to occur even once, yet in Kyle's case, it occurred over and over without our knowledge and without any action from the school to legally report and to stop this abuse for over 7 months. As noted in the WCCO story and the bill, Kyle started kindergarten in September of 2006. During that school year, we received numerous reports of his adverse behavior in school and met on many occasions with his special education teacher, the principal, the district special education staff, and other school staff to discuss Kyle. Sean and I both felt as though they were basically looking for us to solve their problems, since they had no idea, supposedly, what was causing him to be so disruptive in school. As parents, when we heard this, we thought that there must be something maybe internally that was aggravating Kyle, so we brought him to all his medical specialists, his ENT, his orthotist, his dentist, his pediatrician, ophthalmologist. We even started to put him on a gluten-free diet. It wasn't until April of 2007 that we received a call from the school principal stating that Kyle's special education teacher was put on leave due to potential maltreatment of Kyle. And in this conversation, we were told that she may have hit him, pinched him, pulled his hair, but they could not tell us anything more since they needed to conduct an investigation and that their attorney would be contacting us. You can't imagine how distraught, dumbfounded, and angry we were following this call. We were left with so many questions. We met with the school's attorney again, but were not told any of the details since this was an employment issue, and they could not answer any of our questions until their investigation was concluded. In July 2007, although their investigation was concluded and they determined that Kyle, teacher, did abuse him, we were still not told any of the details of the abuse since the teacher requested an arbitration. This arbitration was subsequently held in September and was finalized in December of that year. Although we requested a copy of the finalized arbitration in hope that we could finally find out what happened to our son, it wasn't until early May of 2008 when we received the much-redacted arbitration, the AFIC, in the mail. Sean and I had to manually go through this huge document ourselves to put together a timeline of the abuse that occurred. Up until this point, we still had no idea when the abuse occurred, if it happened all in one day, and more importantly, what she specifically did to our son so Sean and I or anyone else could help him. Upon carefully going through this document, that we learned that there were at least 6 to 8 occurrences of maltreatment, with the first and most heinous events happening in the beginning of his kindergarten year, and with the last two events in April of 2007. Specifically, we discovered that she struck, yelled at, threatened to tie him up, placed a beanbag chair on his back while he was face down on a mat and sat on him, pressed him against the wall in the classroom with the beanbag chair, tormented him purposely with a Santa hat in front of another parent to entice him to cry, pulled his hair, pulled his head back, grabbed his cheeks and thighs, picked him up by his wrists and brought him across the room. In total, 7 months of abuse, and it took 18 months for us to learn out what happened. Since Kyle is nonverbal, he could not tell us what was going on. As a result of this abuse, our family and many other professionals have seen the regression in Kyle's abilities. Currently at the age of 9, he is still relearning some of the basic skills that he knew prior to starting kindergarten. We have been a strong advocate for our son in ensuring that he went to numerous therapy sessions such as speech, physical, occupational, and music therapy to assist his development. But much of these positive benefits we felt he gained prior to his kindergarten year are now lost. Instead, one of the things that Kyle did learn during kindergarten was what his teacher taught him to hit. Although the bill before you is a watered-down version of the initial bill, this is the first important step needed in order to make some legislative changes, so what we went through does not happen to other children. Sean and I both grew up with the understanding that a child's welfare is paramount, and that we safeguard our children at all times. We entrust the school with that role when our kids are under their care. But how can a child's welfare be put first if a parent or guardian is not notified of the abuse? Parental notification should be a given in our eyes, a slam dunk. Again, we thank the Concordia students for recognizing that legislative changes need to be made so that other kids don't fall through the cracks like Kyle. We also thank the co-authors, including Chief Author Chairman Tim Mahoney, Representative Steve Druskowski, Representative Laura Bond, Representative Tim Faust, Representative Peggy Scott, and Representative Tori Westrom for their support of this bill. We again thank you, Chairman Mariani, Vice Chairman Kapp, and the representatives of this committee for your time this morning and listening to Kyle's story. We look for your support of this bill.
Thank you, Mrs. Herman and Mr. Herman. As a parent, and obviously as a human being, I know it takes a great amount of courage to come forward and share this kind of pain in public, and our sincere best wishes for your son. He's very fortunate to have courageous and loving parents. So thank you for your testimony and for working with Representative Mahoney and in taking some important steps toward ensuring and providing better pathways in the future for other parents and children that might unfortunately wind up in the same situation.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the Concordia students have done a lot of work on this. They wanted to say just a few words, if I could. I know you're behind schedule, so I will ask them to be brief, and then I'll make some closing remarks and hopefully move on.
Wonderful. And we do have another person who wishes to testify as well. So perhaps if the students who wish to testify can come forward. Okay, got it. Okay. I should let you know that. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Mariani and representatives of the committee. My name is Katie Benke, student body president of Concordia University, St. Paul. I would like to thank our chief author, Chairman Tim Mahoney, and all of our co-authors, without whose support we would not be here. I would also like to introduce my fellow students, Calvin Bella, Israel Lopez, Chris Siver, Gabby DeMar, Alexander Bedner, and our professors Jane Jones and Dr. David Woodard. I come before you on behalf of this group, as well as over 600 others who have joined Kyle Herman's team, and I am here with a concern that needs to be addressed immediately. Right now, Minnesota statute does not require parents to be notified when their children are abused in a school facility. Abuse, as defined in Minnesota statute 626.556, is striking a child with a closed fist, throwing, kicking, burning, biting, cutting, threatening a child with a weapon, unreasonable interference with a child's breathing, as well as unreasonable physical confinement or restraint. As I said, this definition is already in statute. Our bill is straightforward. It gives parents the same notification that the reporter of the child abuse receives to know if an investigation is going forward or not. After the investigation is completed, we turned the word may into shall and tightened the notification time frame to 10 days. Right now, when a mandatory reporter makes a report, they are able to be notified within 10 days as to whether or not it will go forward to an investigation. But right now in statute, parents aren't notified if an investigation is going forward of their child being abused in a school facility, which allows for parents to be kept in the dark, including recurring offenses, as we just heard from Mrs. Herman. In statute right now, the Department of Education may notify parents, guardians, and other legal watchers of abuse in the school facility after an investigation is completed. But the Kyle Herman bill turns that may into a shall and provides additional safeguards to ensure parents are notified within 10 working days of the completed investigation. We chose 10 days to be consistent in statute.
Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, and the rest of the committee. After meeting with many of you, reading statutes, and since the Capitol became our classroom, we heard your concerns, and here are quick 4 points we want to address. Number one, this is a budget-neutral bill. We believe that the cost is minimal. As we see it, the investigation is already taking place, so there is no additional cost there. The cost would be mailing of the completed investigative report, and currently a stamp is 43 cents. Point number two, prescriptive legislating. We heard you loud and clear. We addressed your concerns. All of those measures have been deleted from our bill. Some of you asked what the Santa Claus hat on our buttons are. Not only do we believe in the spirit of Christmas, but it's a reminder that a teacher waved a Santa hat in front of Kyle to make him cry in front of another student's parent. Something as innocent as a Santa hat was turned into something so tragic. My final point is regarding data privacy. With this bill, we don't release the gritty details of the investigation, but instead, we give notice to the parents that an investigation is taking place. After the investigation is completed, we ensure that in a timely manner, parents are receiving the investigative report similar to what the Hermans waited 18 months to receive. If Mr. and Mrs. Herman would have at least been notified of the initial report of abuse, it would have provided some early answers instead of forcing them to change Kyle's diet and jumping through all the hoops they did in hopes of helping their child.
We thank Mrs. Herman for the we thank Mrs. Herman for the gift of Kyle. His story is tragic and irreversible, but because of their son, we've been given the opportunity to help other children across the state of Minnesota. Thank you for your time. We hope you approve this bill today and join as co-authors of the Kyle Herman bill in 2010. My classmates Israel Lopez and Chris Seiber will gladly answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Bemke and Mr. Bella, and to the students and your professor, and thank you for being actively engaged as citizens in our democracy in terms of shaping laws that properly respond and work with the people of our state. I do have Ms. Connie Skillingstad, who's director of the Prevent Child Abuse Minnesota, who has asked to testify. And then if there's anyone else who wishes to testify for or against the bill, if they can make their way toward the testimony table, I'd appreciate it. Ms. Skillingstad, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Mariani and representatives, for the opportunity. When Mrs. Herman called me earlier this week and told me of this hearing, I wanted very much to be here to support their effort and the effort of the Concordia College students. I am the executive director of Prevent Child Abuse Minnesota and have worked with families and children as a social worker for more than 40 years. Our work at Prevent Child Abuse Minnesota is to prevent all types of abuse or neglect of Minnesota's children by promoting positive parenting and healthy families and also supportive communities that value and respect children. The physical, sexual, or emotional abuse of any child by anyone is unconscionable. But the idea that a teacher who has been entrusted by parents to care for their child would in fact abuse a child is almost impossible to understand. And especially a child with special needs who is unable to articulate what happened to them. As a society, we expect parents to be responsible for the care and protection of their children. In order to do that, parents must be able to trust those to whom they have given the care of their children and whom the society expects to care for them. And we expect those parents to somehow have the tools to be able to do that. If they don't know what's happening to their children at school or anywhere else, it's impossible for them to protect them. At least 13 states still have, still permit corporal punishment in schools, which came back to my attention recently and kind of blew my mind. But Minnesota is not one of them. We do not permit corporal punishment in our schools. Minnesota law prohibits corporal punishment in our schools and also mandates that those responsible for the care of children report if they have reason to suspect abuse by someone, including their colleagues. Victor Veith, who is the director of the National Child Protection Training Center, has said that only 11% of teachers who reported that they would, in fact, report abuse by a fellow teacher. Only 11%. That was an astounding figure to me. But it says that we have a problem. Parents have a right to know if a child, of course, if a child has been abused by the school as soon as possible. Even 10 days to me seems too much. I mean, it seems to me that the school administrator, principal, whoever, ought to be contacting the parents immediately when they learn of such a behavior. Teachers are a critical link to ending child abuse in our society. They must be held accountable for the behavior of themselves as educators and the behavior of their fellow teachers. It's unfortunate that there has to be a law that requires teachers to do what is ethically, morally, professionally their responsibility. We are at Prevent Child Abuse Minnesota support this bill and just came to assure that it can be passed. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Skillenstad.
Yes.
We have questions from, I'm sorry, did you wish to testify as well, ma'am? Or you're here with Ms. Skillenstad?
No.
Okay. Thank you. We have questions from Representative McFarland and Representative Greiland. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This can't be condoned anymore, obviously. My question is, and maybe it's to Ms. Larson more so, is there anything in statute now that directs a school district to notify the Commissioner of Education? Because I'm wondering where the link is that she gets this information and how timely that would be.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McFarland, the Commissioner of Education or the Department of Education is the agency charged with investigating reports of alleged child maltreatment in school facilities, and that is the connection.
Okay.
To follow through, are school districts required to contact the department within a certain amount of time after the allegation?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McFarland, there is an entire process set out in Chapter 626. The school district is not necessarily the reporter in every case. The reporter has an obligation, and that's spelled out in 626, so it wouldn't necessarily be the school district.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. I appreciate the clarification on that issue. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was kind of my question, too. I was noticing one place on page 3 that was deleted, but the local welfare agency is assessing and investigating the report, and Representative Mahoney took that out. And then later it's the commissioner of the agency responsible. But I, too, wondered why the 10 days and the Commissioner of Education. It seemed like it would be more useful to the parents to get it sooner, and by the time it tracks all the way up to the commissioner. But if it's not always the school that's reporting, I could see where that would be the case. But I still think that's pretty slow, and too.
And Representative Greiling, I note the language says within 10 days, and so it's not a bar that you can't report. As I read the language, before 10 days, but obviously there's a sense of urgency that's being expressed here by members and testifiers to make sure that it's as soon as possible. Representative Mahoney, any last comments or thoughts? Representative Mahoney, I've been told by someone who graciously has will not testify, so they won't eat up our time here, but they did want to share that your bill has some relationship to House File 2899 that's being heard in Representative Pawlowski's committee on a data privacy bill. And so you may want to look at that bill as well to make sure that there's consistency in terms of these reporting requirements. It's House File 2899. Good morning.
Thank you.
My name is Molly Wurst. And this is my son, Connor Wurst. I have 3 young children, one of whom, Connor, has Down syndrome. I'm honored to have the opportunity to speak very briefly, I know you're in a hurry, on behalf of our most vulnerable students, like Connor and his nonverbal classmates. These students are most at risk and deserving of the parental notification requirements as set forth in the Kyle Herman bill. My son Connor is a sweet boy who has learned how to bribe his caregivers at school with hugs before tugging on their hands for his favorite activities. This I know from personal experience. However, most days, I have very little information apart from a brief note from his teacher what happened during the course of each of Connor's school days. I'm completely dependent upon the school to share with me important information about his development. As such, I was amazed to learn that the school is not required to share information with me about abuse he may endure by a teacher or other caregiver at school. The Kyle Herman bill will set forth notification requirements for all students, not just those with special needs. My youngest son, Brennan, is the same age that Kyle was when he endured the abuse by his teacher at school. At the tender age of 6, Brennan firmly believes in the Easter Bunny, Santa Claus, and zombies. Being new to kindergarten this past fall, it's conceivable to me that he might not tell me about abuse by a teacher because he simply would not know any better. We place complete trust in our schools to look after our children's best interests, and as partners working toward the same goals, we depend upon the school for information concerning our children's development. The school district, who I feel was responsible for the failure to promptly notify the Hermans of Kyle's experience, states on their website, "We are accountable to our parents and community." Among other things, their district values include accountability to fulfill one's roles and responsibilities and be responsive to the results. Courage, doing and saying the right thing at the right time, in the right way, despite challenge, adversity, or conflicting self-interests. Taking ownership for our collective and individual actions and decisions. I have no reason to doubt the sincerity of the school's stated values, but for whatever reason, their actions don't support these values when it comes to the students' comprehensive well-being. Further, school administrators are not likely to prevent all misconduct in our schools. They should be required, however, to promptly call the parents' attention to what may be a hidden wound so that the healing process may begin. As many of you know already, students are not in a position to learn to their fullest until and unless they have a stable emotional foundation. Absent this legislation, we cannot merely rely on the conscience of the school administrators to do the right thing. We call upon you to hold the schools accountable and have the courage to pass the Kyle Herman bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wirth. And just like the Hermans, your son, Connor, is truly blessed to have courageous and loving parents. And so thank you for coming and sharing with us. Representative Mahoney, we have a couple questions. Representative Benson and Representative Demmer. And members, if you could be concise, I would greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I would like the previous testifier, if she would, to give us the source of the statistic that only 11% of teachers indicate that they are, maybe you could do that at another time, too. You wouldn't have to do it right now. But the only reason I bring that up is if that statistic is really very accurate, then the committee or someone ought to look at strengthening the reporting law. I find that unconscionable, totally unprofessional among my previous colleagues if those statistics are correct. So that's one. But then I just wondered if we could ask Representative Mahoney whether he's had discussion with Education Minnesota concerning the issues of due process and all those kinds of things. I suspect much of this delay relates to those kinds of issues, and if that's a long discussion now, maybe we could discuss it later. but it's obvious that we need some legislation in this area.
Mr. Benson, you may have talked yourself into leading the task force in the coming months. Seriously, it's partly how we do our work here. As you can tell by some of the provisions that were struck from the original language in the bill, there are some incredibly complex issues when you approach this full scale. I think that Representative Mahoney has come at this in a important step, but nonetheless a small step. And I think perhaps we may have uncovered the need to do much more deeper, bigger work here. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, I'll address your 11%. I think, statistics can be moved around. I'm not sure a law is the correct thing. Maybe teachers need to feel safer talking about their colleagues. I fully understand because I'm in a situation where safety is the issue, and it's difficult for us to, you're doing it wrong. You've got to do it differently. But to your other point, which was, Education Minnesota, actually, when the bill went in was introduced, I have been contacted by a number of organizations. The amendments addressed almost all of them. There is some concern about data privacy, and that just came up this morning. So Education Minnesota has said that they think this is a fine bill. A variety of other organizations that had some concerns, but it is going to HHS, so it's amazing what happens when you put a bill in and how many people all of a sudden want to talk to you. So we'll try to address all of them.
Thank you.
Members, I am not going to call up House File 2986, Representative Hornstein's bill, and so that's news flash for those who are here to testify, and there's quite a few, and so the chair apologizes to you all for not managing today's committee schedule better to accommodate your sacrifice of time to be here today. I don't have a rescheduled time yet. We will post that as soon as possible. And so just a heads up. But then also, members gives us a good 10 minutes to continue to have this discussion, because I was starting to feel a little uncomfortable in terms of moving a little bit too quickly on this. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My comments are very short. Representative Mahoney, thanks for doing this. I know I just wanted to say that I had some conversation also with the students, and I didn't want it to go without being said that they have put a great deal of time and effort. I think it's a great exercise that these students put into place, mm-hmm. not just attacking an issue, but understanding the process of moving legislation through and what may happen. There have been, I know, lots of time and lots of effort on their behalf, Mr. Chair, have the students studying what can be done, what should be done, what they thought should be consequences versus how this process works. It's a great exercise, and I compliment the students. Representative Mahoney, thanks for stepping in and working with them. And I just think it's a great opportunity for us to understand that as students go through and learn about government, a real hands-on approach like this is something that's valuable and gives them a chance to see how it works, and I think they can take it forward from here. So, and I do know that they put a lot of time into this, Mr. Chair. This isn't something that they just picked up and said, let's do it. I mean, they've been meeting and studying and talking, and there's a number of hours. So kudos to them and their instructor.
Indeed. And I echo that as well, Representative Demo. And this is Concordia St. Paul, is that correct? Okay, we have two Concordias, and I always... okay, very well. I know your President Hulst. He is a fine gentleman and a terrific education servant. It's been a while since I've seen him. Please extend my warm hellos to President Hulst. Representative Swales and then Representative Slavik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I particularly would like to thank the parents who shared your story with us and how deeply touched I am. And please accept my very best wishes for the welfare of your son. I have a constituent in my own community who just has contacted me within the last 2 weeks about a middle school child who has been basically emotionally abused by a staff member and has asked for me to intervene. I think my question parallels Representative Benson's about mandatory reporting. I immediately, of course, have contacted Washington County and have been involved in this situation. But I guess that for me, I'm a mandatory reporter because I am a teacher. But I was unclear of the fact that the commissioner of the Department of Education is the investigating party. Is this, I am confused, I guess, about the pathway to investigation, and if you could clarify that for me.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Flales, I am not a K-12 expert, so the pathway, my understanding was it went from teacher to administrator at the school level, then went to the Department of Ed. Beyond that, I would probably have to ask staff to get back to me, because I don't have a good answer for you on that pathway. I think maybe somebody does, though.
And the somebody apparently is Ms. Roberts with the Department of Education. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. The pathway can take multiple routes depending. Most, if not all, school personnel are mandated reporters. And in the statute, the maltreatment statute 626.556 subdivision 3, that will list out who your mandated reporters are. And they have 24 hours to report the maltreatment. Usually within the district, they'll have their own requirements that you would notify somebody at administration. But within 24 hours, that report needs to either go to law enforcement, Department of Education, County Social Services, or the Department of Human Services, depending on which one of these many entities has jurisdiction. And that jurisdiction is generally defined by some aspect of statute. 626 defines our jurisdiction as schools, basically public schools and all the charter schools. So We are dependent, the Department of Education is dependent upon reports from the district and or any other mandated reporters who can also report directly to education or to the Department of Education.
And Ms. Roberts, you'll need to state your full name for the record.
Oh, Amy Roberts with the Department of Education.
Thank you. We still have Representative Slawik and then Representative Epke.
I think you may want to stay up here. Representative Mahoney, I think this is a good bill, and I do want to thank the parents and the students that have put this together. You know, this happens in all kinds of schools, and that's, you just talked about charters, and I was wondering about private schools. Now they're affected. I'm also wondering about preschools, because I know this happens to really little kids, too. So what is the governance? And I should know this as a person that sits on this committee, but... How are the private schools covered?
Mr. Chair, Representative Slawik, private schools are not covered by the Department of Education. Our jurisdiction is limited only to public schools, public school districts. So private schools, abuse that is occurring or maltreatment that occurs in a private school would be dependent. Teachers are still mandated reporters. Those reports would generally be handled by law enforcement. But anything handled by law enforcement is going to be defined by your criminal statutes, which typically have a higher bar, a higher standard for what would constitute abuse versus maltreatment. When we are assessing a maltreatment or making a determination of maltreatment, our standard of proof is preponderance of the evidence versus when you're in a criminal setting, you've got beyond a reasonable doubt. And there is a difference between what those standards require in evidence and proof. So private schools, it would generally be law enforcement that would handle that. With respect to preschools, it's the statute limits us. It's not exactly 100% clear. So a preschool setting, we will do a further analysis of whether it's a public school, whether it is a school district-run program versus a community ed-run program. So it can depend on the case.
Representative Slav.
Thank you. I do know that this happens, and unfortunately it is not always reported. So I think it is a important bill, and especially I think that parents need to know. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but I had a similar situation, but at a younger age with my child who's special education. Mm-hmm. And I think that... it's very hard as a parent to understand what's going on. And we had the public school system came unobserved, and they pulled him out that day of that class. Mm-hmm. So I think that there are ways they get involved, but it's something we really have to keep an eye on. So,
Representative Deputy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that this conversation could probably go on for another hour, and I will be as brief as possible. But as I'm sitting here listening to the testimony, I too, as other testifiers have said, I'm concerned about the 10-day lag time. And maybe the Department of Ed could comment, are you the appropriate person to be taking this on? I mean, I would think that the immediate school district would be able to respond more quickly and keep engaged with the families and so forth. And how does I know I'm putting you on the spot, but it comes to my mind, why are we going to a state agency to handle this when it should be taken care of much more quickly, and the issues of teachers feeling uncomfortable to come forward on a situation like this it bothers me greatly as well.
Mr. Chair and members,
Ms. Roberts, I'm sorry. And members, we're going to vote in 60 seconds, no less than 60 seconds, Ms. Roberts.
I'll be super quick. Districts conduct their own investigations regardless of the department's involvement. I think they have a vested interest in what's occurring in their schools, and they are approaching it mainly from school health perspective and then also an employment issue. So a district can begin their investigation whenever they begin their investigation. Our role doesn't begin until somebody makes a report to the department. And we try to coordinate our investigations with law enforcement, But the district's investigation occurs independent because they're approaching from a different perspective than is the department. And our roles are different because we are also charged with evaluating whether or not a facility is responsible for the maltreatment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dupke. Members, again, our deep appreciation to the Hermans and Mrs. Wurst and the students for coming and putting a very important issue before us. Representative Abler renews his motion that House File 3157, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Policy. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, as I said earlier, we'll try to find a time for House File 2986 to be reheard. Representative Mahoney, thank you for coming. Members, we're not adjourned yet. If you can hang in there for just a few more seconds. And if we can get a little quiet in the room. Members and audience, if you can just keep it down for a second. We're not done yet. Members, Representative Kath, would you move approval of the March 2nd minutes?
So moved.
Representative Kath moves approval of the minutes of March 2nd. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, Representative Benson, you're not going to have more than 2 seconds.
2 seconds is all I need, Mr. Chair.
Actually, I think this is a very appropriate to pass this up because this relates to the earlier bill that Representative Lott.
Yes, it was, and I had hoped to have it in time. Okay. It was in the morning New York Times. Diane Radich is someone who I disliked for many years because she had all kinds of disparaging comments about the teaching profession, but she has had a change of heart, Mr. Chair. This short article touches on a number of issues. No Child Left Behind, indirectly raised to the top, and other issues, particularly the one the bill we heard first this morning. And I just think it's instructive that there is hope for people.
Members, and I'm told you don't have it yet. Is that correct? Please pass by our pages, and we'll get a copy out to you one way or the other. Members, thank you so much for your patience and for your careful deliberations today. This committee stands adjourned.